G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
In recent times, lots more of us have isolated ourselves, and sometimes not our own choice because we've been forced to by public health orders or even for our own safety. Some people handle isolation lots better than others. For those who don't handle it well, the feeling of loneliness can be an overwhelming sadness or distress. A new Australian study reveals that the pandemic has merely accentuated an already existing problem. Today, 40% of Australians have never felt lonelier. Maybe you count yourself in that number. One in four say they don't have people they can regularly talk with or turn to. And half of us feel too embarrassed to admit to others that we are lonely, which probably makes things worse. So a conversation today asking, what is it about life today that is creating this deep loneliness? Simon Smart is going to be our special guest through this coming hour. Simon is Executive Director of the Centre for Public Christianity. He's been writing and reflecting on our Australian loneliness. Simon, a special welcome back to 2020.
Thanks a lot, Neil. It's really good to be with you.
Simon, let's come to an article that you wrote just recently, and there's suggestion in there that experts in the field say we're facing a loneliness epidemic. Is that an exaggeration or is this the reality in your view?
I don't think it's an exaggeration. And those figures you were reading out there are reflected in a bunch of different surveys. So we're really hearing over and over again that people report being really lonely and more so than they were, you know, years ago. So those, you know, you mentioned a few of them, one in four, 40% of people are saying they've never felt lonelier. Now, I think we have to factor in the pandemic and lockdowns and all those sorts of things. So that's definitely part of the picture. But there's some other parts too that are a little bit alarming as we think about what's going on here, what's underneath this, what's likely to be the result of it. And it did get me thinking, Neil, about what is it about contemporary life that's contributing to this, exacerbating it. It's an interesting one, a bit disturbing too, I think.
Now, I got to say this, Simon, at the start of your article, you give away that you are an Elvis fan and you're quoting a line out of that very famous song from Elvis Presley from Heartbreak Hotel, which is down at the end of Lonely Street. And You reflect on this sentiment that comes out in the lyrics of that song, and certainly, older listeners to our conversation today will be very familiar with Heartbreak Hotel, the feeling of being so lonely you could die. It's just a wonderful way of describing how people feel like they're dying inside when they are lonely. How do you describe this sort of loneliness and in an epidemic proportion, but how people might be feeling?
Oh, look, it's really, this was what really got my attention, Neil, because absolutely, there's that sense of crushing loneliness that we've all experienced, I think, at various times in our lives, where it really does feel like a weight that's on you. But there's other science that's coming to this that's even more kind of fascinating to me, because it says that loneliness really does reduce your lifespan. They say that loneliness can reduce it by 15 years, or the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So there's a whole lot of things that cognitive issues, heart issues, other physical ailments that come that are impacted by loneliness, which tells us something really important about who we are and what we're made to be and how we're made for relationships, even though relationships can be difficult too. But there, the loneliness thing has physical health, detrimental physical health effects. And so Elvis was kind of onto something there when he said that, I'm so lonely, I feel like I could die. Well, it's actually a scientific thing.
I wonder how many friends or family you might need to not feel lonely, because isn't there a concept that we might have all heard of? You can feel lonely even in a crowd. So loneliness is not necessarily because you're in a whole big group of people, but there's something internal about that.
That's right. And different people will require different amounts of people in their lives for them to feel that sort of whatever it is that makes us feel okay in sort of relationships. So I think it varies a fair bit. For some people, they'll be very gregarious and need lots of friends and have those and be good at cultivating them. For other people, they might only need a few, but it's the quality of the connection that seems to be the key thing. So yes, you can be in a big crowd, you can be at a party and feel desperately lonely.
Just come back to one of those statistics from that research. Yeah. Half of us feel too embarrassed to admit to others that we're lonely, which probably makes things worse.
Yeah.
And I guess some people have a better way of identifying that in others, and there are some people seem to be quite gifted in going and comforting people who are lonely. But you know, we keep this to ourselves. We're not likely to be just saying, I'm wearing a cap with a big sign on it says I'm lonely. It's just something we sometimes are embarrassed to admit.
Yeah, and there's this sense of failure, I guess, if people admit to being lonely, because it's like, well, what's wrong with me? Why haven't I been able to have, develop good friendships? And there's that sort of sledge. People say, oh, no mates, you've got no, you're no, Nigel, no mates, this sort of stuff. So people have, there's a bit of a stigma to this. But here's the thing in this survey and the results that we're looking at here, what we should recognise is, if you're a lonely person, you're not alone. In the sense that there's an awful lot of us who are lonely. It's not just a few of us out on the fringes. There are lots of people who are feeling this, and that there might be things about modern life that are contributing to it that we hadn't even noticed. So yeah, we shouldn't feel like a loser if we're feeling lonely. We're in good company.
Now, social media, some will say, I've got so many friends on my Facebook page or in the other social media platforms that I'm a part of. And because I'm, I've got 500 friends, surely I can't be feeling lonely and all of that. But you're reflecting on all sorts of things in modern life that don't seem to fill an empty void that just fills that loneliness space.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I think is so interesting, is that we can have dozens, sometimes people have hundreds of friends online, but there's something that's qualitatively different about the actual physical presence of another person, being in the same space as another person, looking at them, touching them, having this kind of, we are physical beings, and it's absolutely true that we can be connected in all sorts of ways and really not feeling any level, the depth of that connection that we need. We need to feel understood. And being understood involves kind of, you're seeing people's body language, you're hearing the tone in their voice, you're watching their sort of physical activity that tells you something important about them. And so, yeah, it doesn't seem enough to have this sort of online thing. Now, when we were in lockdown, we saw this. Like, people long to be with each other. I've noticed once we were let out of that situation, for those of us who are in places that were locked down, the people were just rushing to get back into situations where they're with other people and in groups of people. It tells us something about what it is to be human, I think, Neil, that's worth sort of prosecuting.
And Simon, with the advent of digital platforms and, some might say almost fake friends, the friends you have in social media, but you're not saying that internet has the major effect here that is causing loneliness, because there was something already existent before internet, and it seems to have developed all the more, perhaps exacerbated loneliness. Any thoughts here? Because you suggest that, younger people today born into a world where many people have already lost their sense of connection to each other. So this is not just a phenomenon that goes along with the digital age. This was developing even before that.
I think that's right. I think it's exacerbated it. And so I think there are aspects of the online presence and constant online presence that are particular to this very more recent phenomenon. But yeah, I think it goes back further than that. I think we have, in the West, adopted a kind of emphasis on the individual, and alongside that we put next to it a kind of definition of freedom that ends up being all about unlimited choice. So we emphasize the individual over all other things, and the goal in life, the shape of the good life, seems to be all about endless choice. And I personally don't think that's been very helpful for us. And one of the things that it does is it means that you're going to make choices that will necessarily be kind of inward focused rather than other person centered. And I think we've learned, I think there's ancient wisdom that tells us this, Neil, but we've learned it ourselves the hard way, that actually there's a lot of richness in life to be gained from turning not just inward but outward to other people and looking to the interests of others. But it's going to cost us something. I think that you're heading towards this. I think this is an important part of the discussion, that we might gain a certain amount by looking after ourselves, but there becomes a point where we come to the limit of that and we need to turn outwards, to look to the interests of others. And people like Hugh McKay, the social researcher, has, after decades of studying people, come to the conclusion, which would fit with ancient, honestly, Christian wisdom, which would say that the best life is found in service of other people. And so I think we've bought into a kind of mistake here that life's all about me and my choices, my freedom. And that, I think it's cost us in really deep, profound ways.
I think you don't have to go too far in assessing the organizations and the clubs and the things that we belong to recognize that there is one outstanding organizational gathering which actually encourages this serving of others. And this will be the faith communities that we belong to, our local church. This, for you, when you've been reflecting on this, has been such an important element. And sometimes we downplay the relationships we have in church life.
Yes, this is, I think, an important part of the discussion. One of the people I was reading when I was preparing to write that piece was someone who'd looked into a series of gatherings that she noticed reflected, even though they weren't Christian gatherings or religious gatherings, they were reflective of kind of ancient practices. And she was saying people were coming to these things, they're almost like shaped like AA meetings, where people in the city in New York would come together and they'd meet over a particular topic. And someone would offer some sort of reading and then they'd talk about it. And she said the people left in this with this sort of lightness to them, and they were confessing things about their lives to strangers. And it was sort of interesting to her that they were imitating the faith community without the faith. And she was left wondering, do you need that or not? I think she ended up feeling like you did. But it's just an interesting phenomenon. And yes, the faith community, I mean, look, loneliness figures have gone up at the same time as attendance figures for organized religion have plummeted. So these two things have been happening at the same time. Now, is there a correlation? Well, some will argue no, but I think it's interesting. And for me, as someone who's spent my life in faith communities, in church, I know as much as anyone how imperfect they are, sometimes disturbingly so, Neil, I have to admit.
Yeah, yep.
But at their best, these communities do a whole lot of things that I think help us in what we're discussing today. So they situate you within a big story. So life's about more than you. It's about you being part of a big, grand story. It's a story also that draws you not just inward but outward towards other people and acts of service and compassion and thinking about God and other people. And so it's sort of turning you away from just yourself. And I've seen this happen, Neil, where again at their best, these are communities that draw you towards better aspects of yourself. So they kind of impel you towards generosity and being a bit more forgiving or more generous than you were when you started, being a kinder version of yourself. We don't end up perfect, but it is sort of orientating in this direction. And that's why I think these communities offer something that's precious and maybe unique.
Visions 2020 with Neil Johnson. A biblical perspective on life, culture and current events.
1-800-316-316. You can join in our conversation. We're talking about loneliness and The Cost of True Community. And you've been hearing Simon Smart reflecting on an article that he'd written recently, and I thought it was such a great topic of conversation, we would have a discussion about it. Hey, Simon, the secondary part of that title is The Cost of Community. When we talk about loneliness, what do you mean by the cost of community?
Well, I think real community is costly. So, and we don't. This might be why we're not very good at it these days. We're so focused on being individuals and having my own kind of space and my own choices that real community is a little bit, it sort of eludes us, because actually real community takes time. It takes a commitment of yourself to other people. It means you're going to have to get in and get involved in other people's lives that you might kind of rather not. And it involves kind of everyone pitching in and doing the work to create community. I mean, it's not just, you know, we were talking about the church. It's not just church. It's not limited to that. It's like clubs, cricket clubs and surf lifesaving clubs, whatever it is. We all know how well they run because they're all volunteers. And they run well if everyone's committed to it. But it does take some sacrifice. And I wonder if we're kind of, we're on the one hand, we long for community. We sort of hunger for that. And yet we may not always be willing to pay whatever price it is. Now, I'm being a little bit facetious because I think there is a cost, but I also think the reward is enormous. And I've seen it myself. I mean, I'm selfish too. Like, I don't always love the thought of having to, you know, pay that price. But I know that when I have, that, you know, I've really reaped the rewards of just kind of being part of other people's lives and getting to build others up sometimes in a way that just is absolutely rewarding. And
I think,
you know, we're not always great at it.
We can all involve ourselves in the thought of our own selfishness, not yeah. wanting to get involved in the lives of others. And the thought comes to me that sometimes when people watch Neighbours or Home and Away as soap operas that make us feel like we're being involved in the lives of others, but without any responsibility. In some sense, Simon, when you get involved in the lives of others and people's vulnerabilities are exposed to you, our vulnerabilities are exposed to them, there is something in relationship that's formed in that. And we do, in fact, sometimes feel a sense of responsibility for what's going on, because here we are in the middle of it all, and you can't just turn the channel off. Any thoughts here around the ways that we sometimes artificially try to fill that loneliness void?
Well, we talked about online relationships. Maybe that's the classic example of that, where we can, without really any of the inconvenience of the physical presence of someone else, we can have this sort of relationship, but it's a very hands-off relationship. They can be literally on the other side of the world, and we don't have to get involved in them. I heard we had a lecture recently at CPX given by Scott Stevens, and he was quoting someone else, and he was looking at, he said there was a line that he used that said, "You can't love your neighbor if you can't smell your neighbor." And I thought that was lovely, because it's this sense of the proximity, you know, the attention to the physical presence of the other person. And so this, I find this very interesting, that we're good at cultivating a sort of level of relationship that isn't particularly deep, that doesn't involve giving much of ourselves away. You mentioned vulnerability. I think that was a really important word in this. It involves, real community involves being vulnerable to other people, them being vulnerable to us, and finding a way to really love each other in that vulnerability. But yeah, we have to make the step for that to happen.
You're taking us into some really deeper waters here. The concept of being close enough to someone to smell them. You mentioned a little earlier on too, the way you can perceive body language. So what's happening in that face-to-face encounter is much more significant than just a name on a web page or on your mobile device. There's something special in the relationship.
Yeah, like you think for a moment about why sometimes interaction happens online. So there might be, it's either texting, or let's say they're on Instagram, there's messaging and this sort of thing, and there's jokes going back and forth perhaps. But what you're not seeing is when the person blushes with embarrassment, or when they wince from a wound that maybe you didn't you know, you said something you didn't mean it to be too cutting, but actually that really hurt that person. And you see, you, when you're present with them physically, you get to see that, and your brain is interpreting these things and offering you a way to go, oh, we need to engage on that. Whereas online, you never get it. And if that becomes your main mode of interaction, there's a whole aspect of human engagement that isn't happening for you. Now, lots of psychiatrists, psychologists, and people who study these things think that there's a real problem with people who grow up in that environment, because they're losing a skill that is essential to good social relationships. Now, you know, you could overstate that, I guess, but it's pretty, you know, ubiquitous. I mean, we have people online from very young ages now, and I might sound a bit like a Luddite, Neil, but I do worry about what's the impact on those people as they develop, as their brain's developing, what's happening for them if they're missing that really physical presence of the other person.
In fact, you do reflect a little in your article on this younger generation and suggesting the loneliness, the loneliest of all of the generations, Gen Z and millennials. And I mean, that comes down to sort of under 40-ish, I think, roughly.
Yeah, yeah,
but it's so people who are under 40, the loneliness is there in that generation, perhaps more pronounced than older generations.
I found this really disturbing. So when I started hearing about the loneliness stuff, I was imagining the loneliest people might be people in nursing homes who've been left there and they're not connected with their family and their friends, and people have died and they may be lonely, but the loneliest people were these young people who have, you know, the world at their feet, they've got their health, they're energetic, they're online and doing all these fun things, but they are reporting being incredibly lonely. In line with that is the figures on depression and anxiety that I'm sure are related to this, which again are very, very disturbing. Like there's a one that I read recently, just this week, was that it was one in four. This was before the pandemic. One in four young women and girls had a level of serious depression. And I was like, gosh, that's a lot of people. And what's causing this? Are there aspects of modern life that are contributing to that? And I think all these things that are interrelated, and we have to at least think carefully. Are there things about the way we live now that are not helping us? And can we take action to kind of mitigate against it? I think this is what we need to be talking about, Neil.
Our special guest is Simon Smart. He's Executive Director of the Centre for Public Christianity. He's been writing and reflecting on our Australian loneliness. 1-800-316-316 to join in our conversation. In fact, as we get things underway, let's take a call, Simon. Leani is in Burnie in Tasmania. Hello, Leani. Welcome along.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. Leani, what's caught your imagination and caused you to pick up the phone and call?
Well, I've rang you once before about my husband and I with our cleaning ministry. And we clean for a lot of older people, a lot of pensioners, people on low income. And through it all, we are amazed at the amount of lonely people we see. That they make us hot drinks, they want to spend time and talk with us, even though we're there to clean. Just last week, a lovely couple that we cleaned for, he lost his wife to cancer and it broke our heart. But, you know, we still want to be there for him. And there's times where, like I've said before, that, you know, there's cleaning that you do to serve, not expect any money in return, but just to serve and show God's love to them. And I guess that's what we're about, that God's blessed us to serve these people. And I think sometimes, even in churches, we get so busy that we don't see what's out in the community. We don't see the lonely people. But sometimes, even in our own church, we don't see the lonely people.
Leani, what a wonderful insight. And special honour to you, because you've got a business that you see as your ministry, and you're coming across a lot of lonely people. I think if I was lonely, I'd want you coming to clean my house. Hey, Simon, your thoughts for Leani?
Well, look, I really loved hearing that story, actually, because I bet you any money the people that Leani's cleaning for could care less about the dusting, but I bet they love seeing her come through the door. And it brings up a really interesting, I mean, it's great that she's there and maybe do the cleaning as well, Leonie, but, you know, having a physical person walk in and show interest in you when you're really lonely, there's a real need for this. And that's a good example of someone, I think, using their, you know, gifts and skills and whatever to make someone else's life better. And I bet you every week they look forward to that. And I think it's illustrative of how many people are out there who are desperately lonely and just want to talk to someone, have a cup of tea, share something of their life. And it's we're relational beings. We need this sort of connection.
Sometimes we've got time to slow down and meet some of those social needs. Other times your business is so busy you just can't wait to get onto the next job. Leonie, just while I've got you on the line, you've got this combination. You're in business, but you're also attentive to these loneliness issues. You know, how do you actually pace yourself to slow down when you know that there's a loneliness situation?
It's interesting because people get a mindset because of our cleaning ministry that we're always busy, we're always on the go. We are, but there's a time for everything. And the saying I tend to have is, I'm busy like Martha with time for people like Mary. So you make time, or if you haven't got time, you go back and see them. And my husband recently, you know, we've been in the cleaning ministry together for a few years, and he was involved with people being a taxi driver, and he would see that many lonely people. But I think we just got to slow down and just look around us. And even in our own church, there are people who hurt and who are lonely. You can be amongst a crowd and still be lonely, and I think that's what we've got to be mindful of.
Well, Leonie, thank you so much for calling in. And I note here your business is called Cleaning with Care for You and Your Home. And you're in Burnie, Tasmania. So if you're in Burnie, give Leonie a call and say hi and just honour her for the good work she's doing. Leonie, thank you so much for your call. Our talkback line is open on 1-800-316-316. Simon, when we see those statistics, more than a third of those surveyed say they rarely feel like they are a part of a group of friends. If you're locked in aged care, or you can't get out of your home because you have a disability, those are the sorts of things that are concerning there. But when you can get out, there is some possibilities for your solution. And oftentimes, you know, we could harp on this idea, but your local church probably has some friendship groups. What are your thoughts for people who can get out and get to something where they can actually create some friendships and not be lonely anymore?
Yeah, look, I think there are lots of opportunities for this in all sorts of ways, including church. And, you know, I might come back to that because, you know, I have a bias towards it, Neil, you know, as you'd expect.
Hey, mine's not hidden either, by the way.
But there's, you know, there's other things too. There's plenty of clubs and interest groups and for every all imaginable things. I mean, there's sort of hardly any shortage of that. And this is where online stuff can really service in this. When online or internet stuff can be a tool to connect us to other people, then I think it's working at its best. And so I don't want to sound like I'm totally down on that side of things, because it really can. But it involves getting involved. It involves getting into these places. Get on the roster. I mean, I know that can send a shiver down people's spine, but when you actually involve and start getting the activity and working in these places and serving them, because they're nearly all going to be sort of volunteer kind of organizations, there's huge rewards, there's huge social connection, social capital, if you like, where we're building up relational capital, building up friends, finding the people we really connect with. And I encourage people to do that even if they're a little bit shy or a little bit nervous. Find the thing you love. You might love playing chess, or you might love dressing up in medieval costume. You might like cricket or footy, whatever it might be. Try to find the people, the like-minded people. The other thing about church, Neil, I will say, is that unlike those other interest groups, church at its best brings together people from every walk of life and different ages and stages and different cultures and backgrounds, and really demands that they come together and love each other. That's how it works best. And I've seen this, when it works like that, it's kind of magical. There's something really precious about it. And so, I would encourage people to try and find a church like that, where people feel that connection and feel that that compulsion to be part of other people's lives and really, really support each other, because that can happen in a really
good way.
Simon,
you are making, I think, a profound point here when you say get on a roster. Now, just to reflect on this for a moment, because people have all sorts of different ideas about what being a Christian, being a witness, being, in people's lives and connected with community. Mm. And some people are thinking that the way I connect is over a coffee and have a chat, or I invite people around for dinner. But we don't often like to think of the idea of rolling our sleeves up and working shoulder to shoulder with someone else, and the sort of connection that comes when you are pursuing a common purpose and a common goal and even fulfilling something. And I'm, just to mention things like a church working bee, but then, of course, churches have mission departments and all sorts of things that need the sorts of gifts that you bring to the table. So working actually has something deeper than just socializing. What are your thoughts on getting that deeper connection?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is true. And churches at their best have this way of deploying every manner of person in the common goal of loving God, loving each other, and serving the community. I've been, I've witnessed, sometimes I've been involved in those sorts of activities that you described. Like, I remember a family in our church that was really, really going through a difficult time with a very sick child. And a whole lot of people, including people a lot more skilled than me in terms of the practical stuff, but we all went round there and we spent a day just, they were doing all this work and building a garden and fixing doors and doing all sorts of stuff, painting. And there was something really great about being part of that shared mission. Like, it took a bit of commitment, but there was something lovely about it, especially when it was serving this common goal that was obviously a good goal. So, yeah, I do think if we pay a bit of that price, we will feel fulfillment from it.
You like to reflect on cluttering and decluttering, because there's a temptation, isn't there, when you are feeling lonely, that you want to fill your life with all sorts of things in the hope that you'll fill that void. But there's some thought here around decluttering being one of the answers you ought to be looking at.
Well, yes. I think there's two sides to this, Neil. So there's the decluttering part, in a positive sense, can be a kind of a bit more intentional about your life, understanding where you're spending your time, what you're spending your time on, where you're committed, and sometimes having a bit of an assessment of that and going, actually, I need to clear some things out here so that I'm going to pave the way for healthier parts to my life. Exercise, time for, if you're a Christian, you have time for, church and that community and praying and so on, and other parts of your relational parts of your life. The other side to this was what I found, which was a bit disturbing to me, was this trend amongst young people to talk about not just decluttering their houses, but decluttering their relationships. And so they were talking about getting rid of relationships that aren't serving you well. And I found this quite incredible, Neil, because it was like a way in which you're so self-centered that you say, oh, if this person's becoming a bit of a drain on me, I'm going to cut them from my life. Whereas I was challenging that a little bit by saying, what about when you become the person that needs support, when you're not doing very well and you want your friends to get around you and give you that support? And I think there's wisdom in understanding, and you talked about this earlier, the vulnerability, that we have to recognize where we can, in really good relationships, we have to open up and be vulnerable and tell people when we're not doing well, when we're lonely, and looking for that support. And I think the best relationships are ones in which we kind of lean on each other at various times and offer support. We don't just only be the sort of drain, but we also offer support and vice versa. So I think there's just a real need for intentionality in these things. We don't just let life happen to us, but we try to take action that's going to serve not just our own interests, but the interests of others.
Simon, not everyone listening to our conversation today falls into the category of being lonely. In fact, there might be a lot of people who have wonderful marriage. Their spouse is their best friend. There's no loneliness there. All of that loneliness is sort of filled by having that spouse. Or there are families that are growing, and there are people who have children and grandchildren and all sorts of things like that. People who are not lonely or handle isolation better than some others. What are your thoughts for people who aren't in that lonely category? What role do we have if we're not lonely?
Yeah, absolutely, Neil, and you bring up a very important point, because there'll be some people listening to this thinking, what are you talking about? I'm not lonely. I've got, you know, my wife, and we've got my friends, and we've got whatever. And they might also think, I could do with a bit more time alone. I'm not lonely. Right. I need some alone time. And sure, I understand that. What I would say is, and this has been in sort of researching this, it's reminded me of it, to be grateful for the friendships they have and not take them for granted. Like, to recognize that if you're not lonely, you're fortunate, you're blessed in that way. So that's great. But it is a reminder that around us, even if we're not lonely, there are lonely people around us, and more than we realized, certainly more than I realized. And so it was a bit of a challenge to me to go, okay, what do we play, what role do we play in this? I can be someone who helps alleviate the loneliness of another person. I can encourage my friends to be that too, and that together we can sort of look out for us, pay attention to who are the people that are going to be on their own and likely to be feeling the acute sense of isolation. Oh, I could be quick to kind of, oh, I'm going to go and visit them. I'm going to drop in. I'm going to go around, have a cup of tea, find a way to go out for a walk. Recognize that there are lonely people, and thinking, I can be the person that helps make their life a bit better. I think this would be a good encouragement for us. We're coming up to Christmas, Neil. This is a time where actually those of us who aren't lonely often feel the blessing of our family and friends, but there's a lot of people for whom this is a really lonely time. So let's think about what we can do. Maybe make a space at the table and invite someone in who, even if they're not that easy to be around, you might really bless them with that.
I wonder if we're reflecting on Christmas because, you know, we have the incarnation. The line in the sand is drawn. Here the Saviour of the world arrives. God and loneliness. When we're talking as Christians, there's a dimension that we get to talk about that other people are not able to access. This dimension where God is in our loneliness, or he's the one who is able to meet perhaps some of those deeper needs of the heart. Any thoughts here around how you might call on God if you're in that sense of loneliness, Simon?
Well, I believe that God is relational. So God is Father, Son, and Spirit. And so there's a kind of a way in which humans are made in God's image. We're in a sense a reflection of some essential part of God. And so it's no surprise to me that we're so relational, that we need this community. And yes, I believe also in prayer that we can pray to God and say, we're lonely, can you help me? And people do report, don't they, Neil, that a close relationship with God doesn't, you know, it can really alleviate or give people a sense of purpose and peace about their situation, even when they're lonely. So I think that's for sure. The other thing is, you mentioned the incarnation, the physical arrival of God in our midst, which is the story of Christmas. Like, that's what we celebrate at Christmas. And it's no coincidence to me that there we have a reflection of kind of the core of who God is. And here are we saying we need the physical presence of other people to alleviate and end our loneliness. So that's makes sense, doesn't it, of the world as we encounter it. And so this story, I hope for people, you know, they might have heard it lots of times, let's be reminded, this is about God saying, I'm going to be physically present with you, and I am with you. The whole story of Christmas is God, and we're coming to be with you, that his Spirit even now can be with us. So yeah, it's a very important message for us at Christmas, whether we're lonely or not, whether we can be the friend to someone who needs us, and in that way echo the story of God becoming one of us. I'm glad you brought it up, because it's a really important part of the Christian and Christmas message.
And if you avoid that spiritual dimension, likelihood is you'll try and fill the void of your loneliness with what for some will be destructive behaviours. Could be alcohol or drugs or sex or whatever it might be. So the reason why we might be drawn to some of those things might be because we're trying to fill a void in our lives. And so God, in that relational sense, as part of our own lives and our purpose and our being, helps us to be able to resist going off on a path of destruction. I mean, am I exaggerating too much here, Simon? What are your thoughts on how you fill the void that makes you lonely?
Well, if we're built for connection, and we're built for relationship, as I have been kind of saying over and over again here today, then it would make sense that we reach out in all sorts of ways, and sometimes to other people, sometimes those get distorted. So it's like a distortion of a good thing can be part of that picture you were painting there, Neil. And so, yes, I think the spiritual side of life, if we ignore that, is likely to mean there's a gap for us. And so it might mean, doesn't always, but it might mean we'll try to fill it in ways that don't end up being productive and don't end up serving us well. So yeah, it's a good time of year, isn't it, to go, righto, I might have got my kind of community sorted, I might be kind of got my health goals sorted, or maybe my New Year's resolution, but what's this? There's a spiritual side to life. Most of us will agree, not everyone, most of us will agree there is. And so I need to pay attention to that side as well. Now, because of what I believe about that, I think what happens is when we do that and we look to God, we look to who Christ is, we look to Him as the answer to kind of the key to everything, really the key to the universe, then we're likely to fit into a pattern in all these areas that is going to serve us well, to be a whole, a kind of holy, but holistic version of full humanity. And that's what we're kind of looking for. We're looking for the shape of the good life. Everyone wants that. I think that has to involve not just the physical, but the spiritual as well.
Wonderful insights today, Simon. And for listeners, and reflecting on the Elvis song Heartbreak Hotel, down at the end of Lonely Street, there's Heartbreak Hotel. And that might be where some are headed, but across the street may be your local church. And there may be some wonderful relationships and purpose that you'll discover there, because you'll be working together with others and perhaps shoulder to shoulder and bearing each other's burdens, being that one who fills the needs of what we are when we're vulnerable and we're needing that extra relational interaction. And there might be some wonderful friendships that can be formed through your local church. Simon Smart, just wonderful thoughts and reflecting here. And for some listeners, they might want to get a hold of your article. And I think you've gone a lot deeper than what you went in your article today. And I feel very good about you, the beautiful things that you've been able to share. But loneliness and the cost of true community. People can get a hold of that article on your website, publicchristianity.org. Have you got it there online?
Yep. Yes, we do. It was at ABC first, and it's on our website, so absolutely. I'd love people to go and check not just that, but other things as well, Neil.
And just quickly, Centre for Public Christianity, you do a wonderful job. You're in the mainstream media lots, and people calling on your great insights and taking things a little bit deeper on issues of faith. You know, I'm not sure how all your funding goes, but are you in need of a few friends coming up to the end of the year?
Absolutely, we do. Thanks, Neil. We need support. That's how we operate. We've got some really great donors and loyal donors. So if people, you know, saw what we're doing and thought it was useful and thought they could support, we'd be very, very grateful.
And we've had some of your colleagues on of recent times talking about some of the books that they have been writing, part of your Rethinking series. This is something that's going on, and you've got great content. So I'll point listeners to getting a hold of some of those books in the Rethinking series too when you go online at publicchristianity.org. And Simon Smart, our guest this past hour. Simon is Executive Director of the Centre for Public Christianity. Simon, thanks so much for sharing your heart with us today on 2020.
That's always good to talk to you, Neil. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.